Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your official home for Jaguars football. AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio WOKV. Voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst, Jeff Loggeman. And Jaguars.com senior editor, Vic Ketchman. Break down the last Jaguars game and take a look at the next time we take the field. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Aetna. We want you to know the Jacksonville Transportation Group, the official transportation provider of the Jaguars, and by Prudential Network Realty, extremely full service. Now, to get things started, here's Brian Sexton.
Well, here's Jeff Loggeman. Brian Sexton has gotten delayed in a TV production meeting, and we know that Anchorman is very important to what they do at CBS 47, so he's got the night off. It's going to be Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman, and you in the number to get in, 1-800-355-NFL1 or locally, 355-6351. Did I get that right, Joe? I did. Okay. I just wanted to make sure because I usually don't do this part of it. But certainly a lot going on around the league because the owners' meeting, is it concluded by now, Vic?
Yeah, they're on the way back now.
And that's .com, Vic Ketchman himself, the senior editor of Jaguars.com. That's correct, right?
You got it.
I'm doing good listening to Brian Sexton over the years.
All the minutiae, just right.
The minutiae. I like that. Big word of the day, minutiae by Vic Ketchman. But the owners' meeting in Dana Point, California, and let me ask this. What is Dana Point known for?
$550 a night for a room?
Is it San Diego?
And that's not the Cadillac version.
No, that's that would be a very nice. It's up, Southern? San Diego?
It's SoCal, yeah. It's SoCal. It's okay. up-tempo, upscale.
I would have to think golf course.
Oh,
close by, if not on the grounds of where the owners' meetings are being held.
Swimming pools and bikinis and... And
all good
margaritas
things.
And, umbrellas and drinks and that kind of stuff.
So, and there has been quite a few things that have come out of Dana Point, California. And player safety seemed to be the theme once again. And that kind of is maybe an omen for something down the road that Roger Goodell talked about, I believe it was yesterday, in his kind of summary of the NFL meetings where he had talked about possible 17 or 18 game schedule, which as a fan, now that I'm out of the game and not actually putting on a uniform anymore, I like the idea of going to an 18 game schedule. The rules that were passed were all concerned with player safety. And if you're going to expand the season to 17 and 18 games, then you obviously have to have the players with the ability to last 18 games.
You have to eliminate some of the contact. You've got to lessen the physicality of the game to expect guys to make it whatever percentage that would be, to play another 10% of the season, whatever that is. And plus I think there's conversations about a lot of things having to do with reorganizing the league year. I've heard talk about, maybe moving the draft to February or March to give teams a head start on putting their teams together in free agency, what they do in free agency. In other words, if you're using free agency to patch and you don't know what you have to patch, it's tough to get the right guys at the right positions. Whereas if you the draft is the unknown. That's the one where you should be able to draft without locking in on a position.
I would find it unrealistic in my mind to have the NFL draft move.
That's the way it used to be, though, Jeff.
Well, and the reason I say that, the draft has become its own entertainment venue in its own right.
It's an event.
It certainly is.
I mean, TV event.
Fantasy has become part of what the NFL draft is. It has become, as we have seen this year, it's going to be a primetime event. It certainly, I believe, will be a watched event. The ratings, I think, will be good. So if you tried to move that to February.
March.
And I think even March, I think it would be very tough to do that because, the one thing that the league, and I don't want to say has planned and has done a great job of, I want to say I would have to think that it's I don't want to say dumb luck, but it just kind of has happened. the league has become a year-round sport. And if you move the draft farther up, then you know that dead zone that mm-hmm. we dread so mm-hmm. much, which basically is, you know, June and July, mm-hmm. somewhat of May, but not so much of May. Mm-hmm. The dead zone becomes bigger because you have Super Bowl, you know, in the the beginning of the year, the playoff Super Bowl, and then you have a short window of nothing much going on except for what seems to be the coaching season, you know, the changes that happen in the league. And then after that, then free agency starts.
Yeah, but you see, if you're going to push your season back, the Super Bowl won't happen that now well, until the middle of February.
Exactly. But if you had the draft stay in April, then many camps fall soon after in May. Mm-hmm. A lot of coaches like head coach Jack Del Rio did last year, pushed the minicamp later on to where the players didn't have to worry about college commitments, mm-hmm. to where the Pac-10, the West Coast schools obviously get out of school later and they couldn't participate in minicamps the week after the draft, mm-hmm. which is, you know, was tradition for a long time. But it spreads the league calendar out and makes something a draw factor for the league year-round.
But there's the problem. See, if the season is not going to end until Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. or maybe even a little later. Now, you've got these things to do, like the franchise tag and the transition tag. You got the tag deadlines. You've got restricted free agent tenders. You've got all of these logistical things to do from...
Well, it could just push the start of free agency back.
That's what I'm saying. That's what they'll push the start of free agency back.
But then they'll run into the draft.
Then they'll run into the draft. So there's talk of bringing the draft forward.
I don't like that.
And pushing free agency back so that the draft becomes before free agency. You're going to need time after the Super Bowl to do the procedural things you do. For instance, the tags. There's a day you can put them on, and there's a deadline for putting them on.
New head coaches.
It's a two, bingo.
I mean, that's what it's become.
And new staffs.
Yeah.
And so you're going to need time after the Super Bowl, middle of February.
Now we're talking about if the schedule is expanded.
Yeah.
And
I think it's going to happen.
I think it's got to be. For one, what generates more money? Additional regular season games? Or four preseason games?
Well, additional regular season games because TV will add that'll
network
add money
television.
to the TV contract.
Would the Jaguars rather have the additional revenue from a regular season game that's going to generate network television money, mm-hmm. or local television money?
Well, there's also another concern, and that is that they are losing players in the preseason. They are losing big money players in the preseason.
And I've said this.
O.C. Umanure. I mean, we're talking about that. Was he who was the MVP of the previous Super Bowl, the one the Giants won? Was it Umanure? No. Who was the MVP?
I don't remember.
But he was certainly a star in the game.
It wasn't Manning?
Yes, it was. It was Manning. And Umanure was, a lot of people felt, should have been the MVP. He had a great game.
Yeah, great game.
All of a sudden, it's August and he's gone.
Yeah.
For the year.
But the reason is not so much because of player safety, because injuries happen. Yes, the window is open longer, certainly in the preseason when you have four. Mm-hmm. But to me, the sport, it had, six preseason games back in the single bar days?
When I started doing this, we had... It wasn't single bars, Smarty. No.
Well, I didn't say leather helmet.
The last six game preseason was 1977. 1977. So don't give me that single bar stuff.
Joe Theismann wore a single bar in the 80s. Come on. Right?
Yeah, well, that's because he was a punt returner when he first started with the Redskins.
But in the single bar days, which... In the double bar days. Remember Joe Washington? Double bars?
He was a double bar.
Back then, they had six preseason games.
Bob Greasy was a double bar.
Yep. And
you remember Larry Zonka?
I remember
Double bar and a loop.
With the loop on top of the helmet. But they had six preseason games back then because players had off-season jobs. They came to camp to get in shape.
Right.
It's become a year-round profession now to where they train, as you've seen this week with the conversation, Terrell Owens.
And rosters were unlimited.
And rosters were unlimited. But now, with... The sport, the training become year round.
Right.
And obviously this week there's been talk about Terrell Owens hasn't, you know, gone to the voluntary workouts in Buffalo. So I mean it's happening. It started in other mm-hmm. NFL with other NFL teams, not here, But because it's come year round, the need for the additional four preseason games, or for the four preseason games, in my mind, certainly is not needed. Now, back in the, as I said before, single or double bar days, you needed to have six. You needed to get the players prepped and ready. I mean, these guys, a lot of them came in from, you know, doing whatever jobs that they had and didn't train. Well, they train now. You don't need to have four preseason games. Me and you, Vic, at the in the middle of the preseason after two games, we can pretty much cut the roster.
Yeah, I mean, they're shutting it down.
We can pretty much cut the roster, and teams are already shutting it down.
Your training camps are 21 days long now. I mean, you know, they used to be 9 weeks.
But the reason I think that it's going to become difficult to get that is because you have a collective bargaining thing that's I mean, it's that cloud is right over top of the owners' heads. It's right over top of the players' head. It has to be tied with the collective bargaining to get to that 17 or 18 game
schedule. CBA runs out after 2010. We are headed for a period over the next 2 to 4 years of massive change, not only in the National Football League, but maybe in professional sports.
And we'll talk about that because we're headed to a break. And we'll also talk about the four rule changes that are designed to protect players, player safety, when we come back. Back on Jaguars This Week, Jeff Loggeman along with .com Vic Ketchman. The number to get in, 904-355-6351. That's 355-NFL1. And we talked about Commissioner Goodell's statement about possibly going to a 17 or 18 game schedule, and that's what his hope would be. A couple rules were changed, I would think, with that possibly in mind. Player safety. Rule number one, quite simply, would be called the Hines Ward rule. Hines Ward delivered a blindside block hit to linebacker Keith Rivers, I believe it was, of the Cincinnati Bengals, and broke his jaw. Knocked him out, and something that Hines Ward has been doing for many years, it's something that's been going on in the league forever.
Was not fined.
And he was not fined because it was a legal hit. The league has stated now, the initial force of a blindside block can't be delivered by a helmet, forearm, or shoulder to an opponent's head or neck.
So how do you deliver it?
Hands? Thought it was shoulder.
Well, he used his shoulder. He didn't hit with the head.
No, he didn't hit with the head, but it was the shoulder up into the neck and head area. And they've always wanted to eliminate helmet-to-helmet hits. Now they're saying anything to a defenseless defender.
So can he hit with his shoulder?
No.
Okay, so what can he hit with?
He can't hit. I guess he's just got to push, get in his way. Because they're saying the initial force of a blindside block can't be delivered by helmet, forearm, or shoulder. So what's left? Hands? Hands.
Push and shove.
An illegal blindside block will bring a 15-yard penalty. So the Hines Ward rule has been adopted. Here's another one. Initial contact to the head of a defenseless receiver also will draw a 15-yard penalty. This what I would call the Ryan Clark rule.
The Wes Welker.
And if I remember correctly,
he was not fined.
If I remember correctly, Pittsburgh was the only team that voted no on these two rules.
They play a different game.
I remember I was watching some of the highlights, and I believe it was Rich McKay, who I think heads up the competition committee, or at least he appeared to, because he was pretty much running the show and was tallying the votes, and anybody say no, and he said, Pittsburgh, okay.
If there was one abstention.
I don't know who that was.
If they had it their way, the game would be played with sticks and stones.
So those two are changes. The other one, and this is something that me and you had talked about for the last couple of years, the player safety being a concern on kickoff coverage. We have seen the gentleman, tight end, played in Buffalo.
Kevin Everett.
Kevin Everett, who had a neck injury, covering kicks, ran into the wedge, I believe was what it was, had his head down. They are saying now that on kickoffs, no blocking wedge of more than two players will be allowed. And on kickoff returns, historically, you see four guys get hand in hand, and they lead the way.
Well,
it's like the bulldozer.
I mean, this is to we all knew this was coming, and this is no longer your father's football.
No,
you know it's change and it's progress, and even an old guy like me who really believes that the charm of football always has been and still is contact. Even a guy like me has to accept it. It's turning more and more into basketball on grass, and what it means is you're going to see more passing. You're going to see the quarterback become more important. You're going to see it's has become and will continue to increase. It will continue to become more of a quarterback wide receiver game.
The other rules changes they're saying here on onside kicks. Well, we remember Dave Thomas in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Oof, boy, I mean, you could
sounded like someone broke a two before. I was the most unbelievable sound.
Yeah.
I was down on the field when his leg broke, and I thought somebody broke a two before in half.
And so what they're saying now, a kicking team can't have more than five players bunched together pursuing an onside kick. So I guess they kind of got around the rules last year because you couldn't put more on one side than the other. Well, teams started to go to the middle. Yeah. Onside kick.
Yeah, and don't forget now we got this new Tom Brady rule, the lunging thing. That's the
Tom
real
Brady rule.
Highlight rule.
And so when Bernard Pollard fell to the ground and then launched himself, so he was on the ground. Mm-hmm. The rule has always been in place. You can't hit a quarterback low, below the belt.
That's been forever.
When you're coming in unblocked, untouched. The rule is different. If you were blocked to the ground, you could get up or do whatever you could to hit the quarterback anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying no longer. Mm-hmm. So if you're at the ground, at the quarterback's feet, he's still got the ball. You need to get up before you hit the quarterback. You cannot hit him anywhere around the legs. That's illegal.
Well, they're softening the game, and I understand. And it's about player safety. Player safety is a good thing. It's also about this move to an 18-game schedule. Hey, I wrote that and asked Vic, I think it was last summer, and I took some heat about it. You know, I said, here it is. They're going
Here's
to 18
going.
Games. This is the proof, you know, all you need to know. And I think everybody wants 18 games, and I think the casual observer, not the football purist, but the casual observer, who makes up probably 80 to 90% of the audience, wants more passing. He wants more Roethlisberger and Santonio Holmes and Kurt Warner and Larry Fitzgerald than he wants Willie Parker and Tim Hightower.
Not me.
Well, you and I agree in that sense. You and I are old school, and we are football purists. I really do believe that the game is about contact, but it's got to change.
I like the Zonka games, and the Riggins and the Christian Okoyes. I like that.
I'm just trying to be gracious here.
I'm
you
with
know,
you.
For me, it's a big loss. For the game to change this way, for me, there's a definite loss of romance, and I hope I don't lose a sense of attachment to it. But this hurts me very much because I think they're turning it into basketball and grass if it wasn't there already.
A couple other rule changes here before we go to a break. You remember what happened with Ed Hockey Lee in
the
Denver,
San Diego Denver game.
They are now saying that video replays on a loose ball, whether it be a fumble or an incomplete pass, will be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
So that is in play now. And the one that makes sense to me the most, you know, in the past when a team would try an onside kick and it wouldn't go 10 yards and it would go out of bounds?
Just keep doing it.
You keep doing it.
I hated that. It was stupid.
How can you reward a team or a kicker, the team of the kicker, that doesn't make
let
it go 10
deny,
yards and it goes out bounds?
Let him decline the penalty and take the ball.
That's what they have finally done.
Finally.
It is about time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the rule at the end of the game when it's inside of 2 minutes and a quarterback got sacked, but then they would stop the clock to allow the offense on a sack to get back towards the line of scrimmage.
There's one more
that
rule.
That made no sense
There's
to
one
me.
More rule I'd like to see him change someday, this thing about the arm going forward. As far as I'm concerned, if the ball's in the hand and it gets knocked out, it's a fumble.
All right, well, we'll talk more about things that have gone on at Dana Point, California, with the NFL owners meeting right here on Jaguars This Week.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL-1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Two other small notes that came out of Dana Point, California. One is that the wording was changed because next year the Pro Bowl goes before the Super Bowl, so they changed some of the league language to say the waiver period begins after the final postseason game instead of the Pro Bowl. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I don't like in that it changes the draft order, because the draft order has always been based on record, and then you have tiebreakers, which, you know, conference, you know, records, the strength of schedule, et cetera, come into play. They're taking the playoff teams now.
Mm-hmm. Dropping them all the bottom.
So every team that's not in the playoffs gets seeded based on record, mm-hmm. and then they start the rest, mm-hmm. the ones in the playoffs. And so if an 8-8 team beats a 15-1 team.
The Chargers, 8-8, beat the Colts, who were 12-4?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Then San Diego would move, what would be it? Would be, let's see.
We would move beneath the Colts.
Yeah, so here it is. Last season, Chargers beat the Colts.
No, that's not true. That's not true.
Here it is. Last season, the Chargers at 8-8 beat the Colts. Okay, in a wild card game. But San Diego will pick before Indianapolis right. in next month's draft.
Right.
Under the rules, it would be flip-flopped.
But San Diego will pick lower than 9-7 teams that
right.
didn't make the playoffs.
Right.
All right, let's see. Who was a 9-7 team that didn't make the playoffs? Or somebody like, the Jets. Mm-hmm. The Jets, for instance, I think they were 10-6, something like that.
Yeah.
They didn't make the playoffs.
But they would pick ahead of San Diego.
But they had a better record than San Diego. But because they didn't make the playoffs, they will pick ahead.
I don't like
of
that.
San Diego.
To me, certain teams can get hot at the right time,
mm-hmm.
and to penalize them for getting hot, because in essence that's what it is.
It used to be that only the two Super Bowl teams were dropped to the bottom. The Super Bowl loser was 31, the Super Bowl winner was 32, and that was that. Regardless, if you were 8-8, if San Diego had won the Super Bowl at 8-8, they would be 32.
And I like that. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But to start figuring out who beat who in the playoffs and reworking the draft order on that, to me, doesn't make any sense.
Jeffrey, I started doing this in 1972. That was my first training camp, 1972. All of the time from 1972 to now, I have felt has been an evolutionary period. In other words, the game has evolved slowly, incrementally, procedurally from when I started until where it is now. Over the next few years, it's going to explode with change, in my opinion. We are going to see this game get turned upside down. It is going to be broken down. It's going to be torn apart and reassembled. I really think that maybe this year or next year, the 2010, the uncapped year, is going to be the end of professional football as I have known it. And I think when we get either a work stoppage or a new CBA, whichever should occur in 2011, whenever they get a new CBA, whether that is in 11 or 12
mm-hmm.
or 13 or whatever, I think we are going to see a new game. We're going to see a new yearly schedule. We're going to see the draft get moved, free agency get moved. We're going to see more games. I think we are going to see in the next decade. I think we're going to see professional football overseas. I think we're going a team over there.
I think you may be right, but I think we're certainly going to see more games going overseas than just one per
Absolutely.
Year.
Absolutely.
And I think that, to me, I think would be a smart decision. All right, let's go to the phone lines and bring up Rob from Orange Park. Good evening, Rob.
Hey, Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wondered, Jeff, if you could maybe give us some comments on the Rotary Club meeting you went to this week with Fred, and Smith was there, and some of his teammates, and your reaction to that.
I will.
Here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rob, and I will do that. And I was going to kind of save that for the last segment because I thought it was a great event. And the Downtown Rotary Club hosted an event that I'm sure a lot of people had read about or had seen on the news, in which they honored Fred.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fantastic event, and I was invited, and I really appreciate the invitation from the Rotary Club, which I've mm-hmm. spoken to before. And I got to introduce Fred Taylor, who is one of my favorite Jaguar players of all time,
Absolutely.
If not the favorite mm-hmm. one in my mind. But anyway, we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. So let's take a break right now. That way we can talk about Fred Taylor and the event the Rotary Club had. The number, if you want to get in, 904-355-6351. Okay, that's 904 or 1-800-355-NFL1.
To talk to Brian, Vic, and Jeff, dial 355-NFL1. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio, WOKV.
And here with Jeff Loggeman and Jaguars.com guru, senior editor.
Or just
Vic
goo.
Ketchman.
Or just goo.
Come on, give yourself more credit. But anyway, Rob, thanks for the call, and I wanted to get to this at some point, and we just got on so much league talk. But it was earlier this week, Monday, as a matter of fact, that the Rotary Club, the Downtown Rotary Club, wanted to honor Fred Taylor. And Hank Cox, attorney here in town, great guy, good friend of mine, had asked me if I would like to attend and speak, and I said, I would love to. Mm-hmm. And anything for Fred, and get a chance to see Fred before he departs for New England, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's not like we're going to see him a whole lot.
We'll see how everybody feels about him next season yeah. when the Jaguars play in New England.
Yeah, at New England, correct?
Yeah.
And so it was great seeing Fred, and Fred was, when the event started, a great lunch, and many people spoke. Jimmy Smith was there. He spoke.
Good.
Skip Richardson read a statement on behalf of Wayne Weaver. Mm-hmm. Brian Coughlin, who is a lawyer for Hank Cox's law firm, mm-hmm. read a letter from head coach Tom Coughlin. And then I got to do a little thing on Fred, and to me the emphasis of what I said was it was great watching a man mature mm-hmm. and then also a player mature over his 11 years here in Jacksonville.
There have the two players that in my career that I've covered that have grown the most in their careers are Fred and Mel Blount.
Yeah.
Those are the two, clearly.
And my statement was this. I remember a young man with a golden smile.
golden teeth.
And I didn't say teeth. I just said golden mm-hmm. smile. Very shy, grow into a man who may be one of the best interviews,
uh-huh. That's right.
Media savvy players that has ever been through here.
You want a little tidbit of information?
But it was always genuine. It was never anything mm-hmm. contrived with Fred.
Love
honest,
him.
Sincere, yep. humble. That's Fred Taylor.
Love him. I'll give you a little tidbit about those teeth. Tom Coughlin did not like those teeth. Almost cost him not to draft him.
Did you
those
do you know
teeth really bothered Tom?
Well, when Fred was a rookie, I remember when Fred came in, and I had a lot of respect for Fred. He seemed like a really nice young guy,
mm-hmm.
and I knew that he had an agent that was questionable.
Tank Black.
Yes, because I was a vice president of the union. Mm-hmm. Had done some things with the player education program. We had moved up the education part because we had two first-round picks that year, mm-hmm. Donovan and Fred. Well, my efforts didn't work. Fred lost some money. But I remember
lost his entire signing bonus, his rookie signing bonus.
And one of the things that I had said to Fred early on, I said, hey, Fred, I'm not telling you what to do, but you have a great opportunity in Jacksonville. You're a Florida native. Mm-hmm. You're a Florida Gator.
Mm-hmm.
And them gold teeth aren't going to help you out. And I said that to him his rookie year. Now, did he take them out because of me? I don't know.
What did they used to call those, a grill? What did they call
those?
Gold
grill.
Gold grill, yeah, that's it.
The gold grill.
I mean,
at the event, you know, everybody, you know, said their things, and then Fred got up, and he said, I'm not going to cry. But, you know, every time. Oh, yeah, he was. You know, with Fred, it's who he is. And he said something. He said, look, he says, I don't deserve this.
He does.
But he does.
Yeah, he does.
You know, he really does. And I was happy to see him overcome with emotion. And he had nothing but great things to say about the organization, mm-hmm. The Jaguars organization, Wayne Weaver. And he said that I promised Wayne that I will come back and retire as a Jaguar.
This is the way it's supposed to be. This is how it's supposed to happen. There comes that point in time when all teams and their players have to part. Whether it's and there are very few like Jerome Bettis, where he wins a Super Bowl and he waves goodbye to everyone and he rides off in the sunset. No. I've covered a lot of great players, and they very rarely do they very rarely happen that way.
I mean, Jerome Bettis had the best
at home
ending that you could possibly have.
At home. With his parents.
In his hometown of
Detroit.
Exactly.
No, those don't happen very often. Usually the guy is, you know, he's hit the end of the line and he's coming off the worst year of his career. Well, Fred didn't have a great year. But he didn't have the kind of year where you want to kind of drop your head and look away.
No.
You see, I'd rather him not have that year here. If he's going to have that year, have it in New England.
Have it somewhere else.
Right.
I don't think he's going to have that year in New England. I think he's got a lot less than that. Hey, 1,041 yards away from the great Jim Brown. Less than, I think it's 82 yards to pass mm-hmm. one of my childhood heroes, the great John Riggins, mm-hmm. Riggo, the Diesel.
Mm-hmm. Yep, one of the great 30-year-old running backs, you know.
Maybe the best ever.
In his 30s.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because he hit his stride.
When he was old. Yeah. Well, he spent so many years injured early, you know, when he was with the Jets. And then when the Redskins got him, they got a guy who had lots left in the tank. Are the Patriots getting a guy with a lot left in the tank? We'll find out.
Maybe not a lot,
mm-hmm.
but certainly maybe enough.
Well, but, you know, the Patriots, wow, they are so impressive. Jeff, they've got a ton of draft picks with these compensatory awards that they just got. They are loaded with picks and loaded with high picks, and they have signed players in free agency and let players go and got compensatory picks, and they trade for players and trade players for picks, and they have just positioned themselves. I'll tell you what, I think Fred's going to get the ring. I think the Patriots are the team this year. I can't think
who would not pick them.
I can't imagine how you could not pick the Patriots.
If Tom Brady is back.
Yeah. I can't imagine how you would not pick the Patriots as the AFC favorite. And Fred is a Patriot, and Fred wants a ring, and I think he's going to get it.
I hope he does. Where's the Super Bowl being played at? Is it Miami this year?
I think it is. Joe.
Hey, Joe.
Just type in there Super Bowl, 40
what?
45? I think it is 45.
Maybe.
Or 2010 Super Bowl.
Yeah. Because if it's in Miami, I mean, that could be an opportunity for Fred.
It's a great question. I hadn't thought about it.
Win a Super Bowl essentially in his hometown.
It was just in Tampa. And I think it is going back to Miami, but I don't know. Anyhow, I mean, they got to be the favorites. They are loaded
Randy
with draft
Moss,
picks.
Tom Brady.
They are
Fred Taylor.
Loaded with
Wes
draft
Walker.
Picks in a deep draft year, and they have positioned themselves
beautifully. What did they get for the quarterback?
34th pick of the draft.
34th. Pick
only
of
because
the draft.
They didn't want to be higher. Because they got so many picks, they don't want to you know have to spend all that money on a draft class. They could have gotten as high as 14.
But defensively,
Denver was going to give them, I believe, the 14th pick of the draft for Matt Cassel. They said, no, we don't want to be up there.
Speaking of that, yes, Joe.
Super Bowl 44.
It's 44 in Miami. It
wow.
is in Miami.
I'm telling you, this is a Bettis.
It could be.
This is another Bettis
That's
job.
That's what it could be. But Bettis obviously established himself in Pittsburgh long before the Super Bowl was held.
Except that Fred would have to do it with another team, but
similar.
This could be.
It could be a magical ride for
a magical year for Fred.
Very not only surpassing Jim Brown, but participating in a Super Bowl in South Florida.
And he doesn't have the teeth anymore, right?
No, he does not. Come on, Vic, you know that. He's got a great smile.
Yes, he does.
He's got a great smile. But the New England Patriots.
Who's your pick in the NFC?
NFC?
The Patriots have to be the pick in the AFC.
By the way, let me just share you one last line that Tom Coughlin put in there in his statement that Brian read. When you get to New England, tell Tom Brady we are sorry for beating up on him in Super Bowl, whatever it was.
The
42. Nice little. Tom Coughlin had a sense of humor.
So give me your NFC team.
I mean, how do you pick?
Quick.
At this point.
We'll do it next week.
Giants.
No.
Who are you picking?
I know. Philadelphia.
No way. All right, folks. we'll talk to everybody next week, same time, same place.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, brought to you by North Florida's labor unions, such as the Association of Firefighters in Duval, Nassau, Clay, and St. Johns Counties, and Community First Credit Union, the home of First Down Touchdown for teachers. Jaguars This Week is a presentation of the WOKV Jacksonville Jaguars Radio Network.